Hello and welcome to another edition of Visions with me, Eudalie Wickham-Ashby. And today I have one of the stalwarts in the volunteer community, Mr. Steve Skeet, or let me call him by his given name, Stephen Skeet. I have known Skeet since, I was a baby. So many years I've known him being involved with street gospel ministry, but I first met him many years ago with the Barbados Youth for Christ organization. And he has also been a friend to persons with disabilities, more particularly with the organization Barnard. So I want to say welcome to you, Steve, and thank you very much for your tireless work that you do in this island of Barbados and throughout the region as you share of yourself, your family, your time, your talent, and whatever else you share. So welcome to Visions.
Thank you very much, Julie. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
Okay, so Steve, let us talk a little about why you got involved or how you got involved with volunteering.
Well, that's a long story. I've been doing volunteer work ever since I was a teenager. I got involved with Youth for Christ, as you've said, way back in the 70s, you know, when I was about 17 or 18, I got involved with Youth for Christ, Christian organization, you know, doing evangelistic ministry, going around to churches and, you know, taking teams of young people to sing and to minister in various ways. So that's how I got involved. I stayed with Youth for Christ. We did all kinds of activities. I was with that organization up to about 1994. And then I left in that year. And in 1995, started Street Gospel Ministries. And we were doing the same kind of things initially, you know, working with young people, primarily on the streets and in the communities, you know, trying to find different ways to keep them on the straight and narrow, you understand, but also to bring them into the Christian faith. So yeah, I've been involved in voluntary work ever since the 70s, right up until this time. Street Gospel Ministries was started in 1995. Last year, I think we celebrated our 25th year. And this year will be 26 years of operation as Street Gospel Ministries.
So tell us a bit more about Street Gospel Ministry, the type of work you do and your target group and where you get your funding from. So let us learn a bit more about it and the impact that it is making in our country.
Well, it has evolved. You know, we started off primarily as an evangelistic ministry, ministering to young people, trying to get young people, you know, to, you know, give their lives to Christ, get into something meaningful. We were working with street people, people on drugs. I got involved around that time to around the mid-1990s with a group called Teen Challenge. And we worked very much with drug addicts. Cocaine especially was very prevalent at that time. So that was the kind of ministry we were doing. And then while working on the streets, usually, we realized that there were people who could benefit from having a stable home environment. A lot of young people who were on drugs and so, they were gravitating to drugs because of their home environments and so on. So then we decided, you know, that we would start offering homes to people where they could develop themselves and where they would have a chance to really, you know, go about their education and things like that. And from that, develop what we have now, the program that we call Street House developed, where we take homeless people in from the prison, from drug rehab, psychiatric, people who need help and who could benefit from having long-term accommodation. That's what we've been doing recently. And as time went on, we branched out. We were dealing with primarily with men originally, and then we started working with women, and we work with women now. And then we decided to work with younger men, men in the early teens. So we're developing now our program and actually have a home where we're going to soon start taking in very young people and giving them a chance to develop themselves, educate themselves, you know, get employment and bring them to a position where they can really, you know, establish themselves in the community. So our focus right now in Street Gospel Ministry is primarily on the homeless and helping homeless people to develop and become independent.
This is excellent news. I think they need that additional support. And yes. I'm pleased to learn this. Okay, so let us talk about the process. If a young man is homeless or has an addiction or a psychiatric issue, how would they be able to enter one of those homes?
Well, we work almost exclusively through agencies. We have a very close relationship with the Verdant House. If there's a client there that has finished their program, is leaving, and he has no safe place to go, or he doesn't have any home at all to go to, they would call us and we would work with that young man, see if he's the kind of person that we want in our program, you know, where he wants to go. And if he's a suitable candidate, then we take him in. So we don't take everybody off the streets. I mean, our program is too small to accommodate everybody, but we take those who we think have a good chance of making it out and who really want to make something of their lives. You know, what we always say to men who we take in usually is that we don't offer accommodation, we offer opportunity. And if you're willing to take an opportunity to develop yourself, then that's the kind of person that we want, a person who really wants to grasp an opportunity and run with it. And so that's the kind of persons that we have been working with. And it doesn't matter where they come from. We get calls from the prison every now and then. We haven't done a lot of work at the prison since the onset of the virus back in early 2020. But we often get calls from them, right? We've had one or two inquiries from other institutions where they want to send people to us for help. And I want to say to you, Lee, that our program, we do not run a shelter. We run homes for men. We keep people for as long as we need to for them to develop. So we've had men in our program who've been there for 3 years. But the reason why they've been there is because we could see where they're going. These men have been educating themselves. They've gone to school, right? We've had men who've been building houses while they're with us, and they leave our program and go right into their homes. So we want to develop them to the point where they actually can go into their own homes and be, you know, independent. That's the kind of work that we are doing. So it's not something where, you know, you do a half-hearted thing. We want when men leave us that they go to some place that is permanent. We don't want them to return to the streets or to their old life. And that's what is happening. I can point you to many examples of men who have gone on, who are doing well now. They're married, they're settled down, they're driving their cars, they're past me, they blow their horn, you know, they say hi. That's the kind of thing that we're doing.
And this is what we need in our society right now, that level of support to help persons to move out of that space where they may be not functioning at their full capacity and move into a new space where they can. And I really love that phrase that you have, not accommodation, opportunities. I love it. So go ahead.
Yeah, and you were asking about funding. Years ago, we came across a model that worked for us, Judy. You know, my mom always taught me this. My mom was a very hard-working woman, poor woman. She raised 7 children, very hard-working woman. And, you know, and she always said, you know, the best way to raise funds is to earn it. And we have decided in Street Gospel Ministries that we're going to earn most of our funding. So 60% of all the money that we use for our programs, and we spend a lot of money, right, every month, comes through contracts that we have. We have a gardening project that we call Project Eden. And through Project Eden, we go out and we do work. We tend gardens, we do bush facilities, we cut down trees, because we believe that the best way to raise funds is the hard way. And so we are not totally dependent on fundraising and grants and that kind of thing. We go out and we work. Now, we do get support, right? There's some institutions in Barbados that support us very well over the years. I don't know if I can call the names of some of them, but the CIBC have been very, very, very good to us. So I need to call that name. You know, they have helped us tremendously, even up to recent times. So we thank them very much because they understand, I believe, the work that we do. For instance, over the last 2 years, between the end of 1919 and now, we have had to broaden the scope of what we do. People have been needing homes. People have been, you know, being evicted because they're not paying the rent because of the virus and so on. And we have used and all grants that we've received to help people with their food problems, with paying their bills, paying their rent. We've actually rented homes for people using some of the funding that we've had, people on the street. So we've had to adjust our model a little bit. In fact, recently too, we started a feeding program. And Saturday evenings, we're giving men a good meal because we know some people have been showing a need for that. So we've had to broaden our scope a little bit. But we're hoping that once things, you know, get back to, let's say, normal, we can then keep emphasizing helping people who are homeless and helping them to develop at that level.
Fantastic, Steve. And I think I can't help but say it again. This is exactly the direction that our NGOs, our community-based organizations, our nonprofits, as well as some of our public agencies need to move into, because people do need help, particularly during this COVID-19 pandemic period.
That's correct.
To really maintain themselves.
Yes, we are seeing a lot of needs, you know, for people who are asking for help. Of course, they tell you that, you know, everything is going up. One of the things that we've done over the years too, Yuli, is that we have networked and we developed friendships with people. You know, I have people who have been supporting this organization for 25 years, you know, giving their $100 a month, giving their $200 for all that time. But the thing is, they can see what we're doing. They can see the men who our program is turning out. They can see that those men are coming out of our programs and they're going on to better things. The men are coming out educated. We ensure that men who come into our program educate themselves, that they find a profession, they find work, they learn a trade, so that they have something that they can do to sustain themselves when they leave us. So that's our goal, to turn out men who can sustain themselves, live independently, but also men who can also help others. See, the key is, once you have been helped, you need to go out there and find someone that you can assist. So, you know, I can say, Yudley, that I'm very, very grateful to people who supported us over the years. And our men have people in the community that they can thank for the help that they have been receiving.
So, Steve, as you spoke about the work that Street Gospel Ministry is doing, obviously you have a team of people that are working with you, and you just said that you have networked quite well. So share with us how these individuals or these organizations have been given that practical support. Do you have like a counselor on board? Do you have a social worker? Do you have teachers? How do you do it?
Well, we have a board that works with me. People who have been with me again for many, many years. We have a secretary, very competent and a very skillful lady. Good. To whom I'm, you know, eternally indebted. She helps me very, very much. We have other members there who we meet with from time to time, and they help us in the guidance of the organization. They help us to iron out some of the difficulties and so on. Apart from that, we have people who offer counsel and guidance to our men. When the men come into the program, we like to know that each one of them have a mentor, someone they can talk to, relate to, and someone who will keep them really on the straight and narrow. And then we have our donors, people who give their support financially on a monthly basis to keep the organization going. And then we network with other organizations. I mentioned Verdon House, you know, who we've worked with again too for a very long time and who we partner with. They also give us their support financially as well. Then there's the National Council on Substance Abuse. We have been friends with them for a very, very long time. We've partnered with them. They've assisted us in many, many ways, right? I can call the person who's managing that organization, Miss Betty Hunt. Betty has been a wonderful friend to me. We've worked together. We share together. We support each other in whatever way we can. And so by networking, we get to find out a lot of things happening in the community, and we get to serve the community by helping those organizations as well. So we have learned over the years that, you know, it is good to do that, because if you don't network, you find yourself doing things you really don't have to do. So they have their work. We have ours. They know where we connect in our different ministries. And so we can assist one another in those areas. In fact, right now, we are about to enter another project with the NCSA that is coming into fruition, where we're going to offer further help to people who come to them for assistance for work that we can do. With that network, we can help them to further the work that they're doing and help more people in the community. So it's been a wonderful experience annually working and networking with other groups. You know, that's why I like what we do with Barnard, because again, Barnard working with other organizations and with different and networking with different associations, you can further help your people. You know, you can't meet all the needs that everybody has in the community. So it is good to work with people who have other ways and means of helping others.
And that's quite true. So now that we've skipped on over to persons with disabilities, share with us your thoughts, because you have been around for many years, as you have said. Have you seen a significant shift in the mindset of the Barbadian public towards persons with disabilities?
If I had to speak honestly, I would have to say no. I think too many of our disabled people are still marginalized. A lot of disabled people that I meet are still shut away. You know, I think the public needs to be more aware of people with disabilities. And the fact too that any one of us can be disabled. I mean, I can go down the road and get involved in an accident and I end up in a wheelchair or whatever. I think there's still a lot of work that needs to be done to get people to understand that there are disabled people out there and they need some assistance. And so we ourselves in Street Gospel Ministries, we have embarked also, not just in recent times, but we've embarked on a program where we want to help disabled people. So we are providing now, again, food assistance for people with disabilities. We're helping them to move to get from one point to the other across the country as we come across those needs. We're helping them with their rents because we know that a lot of disabled people are under severe hardship at this particular time. And I think that we need to make the public more aware of people in those situations, their transportation needs, their medical needs, there are a lot of needs among. But I think one of the primary needs is need for employment. You know, there are many disabled people who are skilled, who are trained, who are educated, but they're just not getting the opportunities that they deserve.
A lot of what you have said, Steve, is pretty accurate. Then how do we help in shifting the mindset, that perspective that generally pervades our community, that persons with disabilities are helpless objects to be, you know, just kept in a bedroom or in a back room and never be in the front, or, you know, just be the token person in a particular position? How do we really change that mentality?
I think one of the ways that we could do it usually is by seeing the disabled not just as people who need handouts, you know, and just, let's say, you know, welfare. I think we need to go beyond seeing that with many people in the disabled community. In fact, we have one very, very good example, the lady who was the president. So I think, you know, we just got to move away from the idea of just giving food and money and develop people in a total way. That's my understanding of development for people that we help in Street Gospel Ministries. Someone who comes to you for accommodation needs more than accommodation, because when they leave you, they have to help themselves. Are you helping them to be able to help themselves and to become efficient and productive after they leave? So I think we need to develop the disabled community in a different way. People just don't need housing and food. They need to be brought to a position where they can help themselves and employ themselves. So I think the model needs to change. And all of our welfare programs need to have that different focus. People need more than food, clothing, and shelter. People need to be able to sustain themselves. And so are we helping them to be self-sustaining? Because if we are not, then I don't think we're totally helping the disabled community. That's my view.
Well, your point is extremely valid, because we do have to not only provide the necessary accommodations, but also, as we keep emphasizing with our primary school children, we have to prepare persons with disabilities to be functionable within our community, where they can lead independent lives, where they can be able to contribute to family life, political life, cultural life, every aspect of our society. You know, persons with disabilities can be and should be involved once it's their choice.
Yes, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. You know, so I think we need to make our institutions of learning much more accessible. You know, we hear of the ones and the twos who are in secondary school and so on and university. We need to improve on that, right? We need to make all of these institutions more accessible to people who are, you know, who've lost their sight, their vision, and people who lack in mobility. We need to make these places much more accommodating. I know that over the years, usually that Barnard and other organizations here have, you know, advocated for things like ramps and, you know, places for people to park and park spaces and so on. I think we need to move beyond that now and start agitating for other things. You know, we need to open up all of our institutions to members of the disabled community. And we need to really agitate for that. And also, you know, that when people who are disabled present themselves for employment and so on, that they be given consideration, not held back because of their disability, but they need to be evaluated according to their skills and their abilities and their suitability for the particular job that they're doing.
Yes, Steve, I truly agree with you because we have to do more. And as we go through and experience the COVID-19 pandemic, it has brought to the fore many, many of the issues that have been there for several years. But additionally, it has also, I think, prompted persons to think a bit more out of the box, be a bit more unconventional so that we can find meaningful solutions for persons with disabilities to continue living within our communities. One of the big questions that I like to ask my sisters and brothers with disabilities is, should your parents or caregivers die before you do? How will you survive? How will you cope? Are you in a financial position? Do you have somewhere that you can live? Will you become homeless? And these are the hard truths that we need to discuss in a very open and frank way in our society.
Yes, yes. Because like you said, I meet people like that every day who are almost totally dependent on a particular caregiver. And it is true, when that caregiver dies, they are in serious trouble. Not only has that person been the caregiver, but that person has been the person who has understood them and their needs. And then sometimes they have to be turned over to a person who doesn't have that same understanding and who's not going to give the same level of care. While you're on that too, you know, you can also say that there's some ministries that function very, very, very slowly when it comes to the needs of people with disabilities. And a lot of these ministries and so on need to be sped up a lot so that people can get not only the help that they need, but in a timely manner. And I've seen that, you know, that you have to be jumping through hoops and pulling so much strings and doing all kinds of things to get people, even simple things that they need, simply because they're unable to get up and go about those things for themselves. So we have a long way to go in Barbados, Youth Leader. It's sad to say, but we have a long way to go in not only the understanding of people with disability, but resourcing them. And when I say resourcing them, like I said before, resourcing them does not only mean giving them food and clothing.
Yes.
It means helping them to be able to help themselves. That's what we need.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the programs that I particularly like that has been established many years ago and even more recently, an appendum to the home health program that is provided through the National Assistance Board. And I would like to see a further expansion and even redesigning of that program where persons with disabilities can now access those services, not just the regular 8:30 to 4:30, but outside of those hours, because some individuals with disabilities live at home on their own, or they may have aging parents or caregivers who are not really capable of providing the level of care required. And having an attendant or an assistant that can visit the home and provide those needs, I think, will be essential. We have the companion program where persons are now able to go and sit, chat, read, and do some general things with the older persons. Again, people with disabilities need that as well. And not just older people with disabilities, but some of the young and middle-aged people with disabilities as well, because we have to work right throughout the spectrum.
Yes, that is true. I would also like to use this program usually to encourage members of our church communities. You know, I'm involved in church. I've been all my life. You know that Christian people have been involved in helping and these services for a long time. But I think that, you know, churches and communities can establish relationships with homes where they can aid many of these families on some, you know, longer term basis. In my own local assembly, we have people who take it upon themselves, you know, to interact with members of the disabled community. For instance, on Sundays when we have church, we go and we give a ride to church to a person who, you know, is disabled, people who are in a wheelchair. We bring them out. You see sometimes the joy on the faces of people like that, you know, who are unable to leave their homes, who have no transportation to move around. And, you know, the joy of just being out for a morning is so great. You know, it's a wonderful thing. It takes time, of course, you know, to get a wheelchair out of a house, to get a person into a regular conventional type of transportation that is not built for wheelchairs and so on. It takes effort. But I would like to say to our brothers and sisters, you know, that it is worth the effort to help people to be a part of a regular church service and, you know, to feel that they are doing something that is normal that they used to do before, perhaps, and are unable to do it now. I think, you know, we should think about those kinds of things and think about the people in our communities who could benefit from a day out. You go and take them to the beach, you know. We need to be more caring about people in our community who are disabled.
Well, Steve, I'm happy that you raised the point about the churches, because I believe, like you, that our church fellowship can do more to give support to the individuals with disabilities. And I think they also need to have some discussion in terms of how that support, or what that support will look like. Because I know sometimes some people struggle with the notion or the misconception that individuals with disabilities are being punished by God because of some misdeed in the family's lineage, or, you know, something like that. But that's a conversation you and I will have another time, Steve, because our time has flown by so quickly. And I just want to say thank you very much for coming and sharing with us and allowing us to learn a lot more about Street Gospel Ministry and the tremendous work that you're doing within our community. And I want to say I salute you, your board, and all of your volunteers who have worked to help stabilize many of our young men who are now able to contribute in a meaningful way to themselves, their families, their extended families, and our society in general. So I just want to say thank you. We certainly appreciate the work that you are doing.
Thank you very much, Yudley.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudley Wickham Ashby. And I want to say a very special thank you to all those individuals who contribute to donate items, household furnishings, clothing, and so on that are redistributed to vulnerable persons who are in need. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or via Starcom at 1-246-430-7300 and via email visionsbarbados@gmail.com. That is visionsbarbados@gmail.com. So until next week, be safe, be good, love yourself, and love your neighbor as you love yourself.